So that's all that we need.
Not only sufficient, but the only thing that could be done for
okay,
my salvation.
Okay, so we don't need baptism then, because it's the only thing. Is it the only thing or is it not? Do you need to be baptized or not? Because if you need to be baptized, it's not sufficient.
It is true that you are an extremely skilled debater and you're good.
1, 2, 3. Welcome to Apologetics Live. We're here to answer your questions and challenges about God and the Bible. Meet your hosts from Striving for Eternity Ministries, Andrew Rappaport, Dr. Anthony Silvestro, and Pastor Justin Pierce.
We are live, Apologetics Live, here to answer your Bible questions, challenges, whatever you may have for us tonight. We are here. We're up to the challenge. You disagree with us. You think that we're wrong about the Bible. You think that the Bible teaches that abortion is okay. We can handle that discussion. That's what we're going to be here today doing. Now, I don't have our regular co-hosts. They're all out. But I brought a friend in. Pastor Darren Steed, how are you, sir?
Oh, man, I'm doing good. Better than I deserve. I feel bad. That was an awesome intro of all those great co-hosts that you have and stuck with me today. You know?
Yeah, but I reached out to you because the topic we're dealing with is the topic of abortion, which you kind of deal with quite a bit. And so let me just give the for folks that are watching or listening, why we set this up. I right now don't see anybody backstage, but anyone can go to apologeticslive.com, and from there you can see, you scroll down, you'll see the little duck icon for StreamYard, and that is how you join us. Go there to join us to have the discussion. Now, I'm saying that specifically to one individual on Twitter, because this started on I somehow responded to something that Dr. James White was responding to some quote unquote pastor, and the pastor, when I responded, it became a thing where he and I were going back and forth. His I guess description of himself is a pastor of some church, and he says he's all Christian, all gay, all the time. And so that started the discussion and went from there to a couple of women that claimed they were female pastors. And so we changed into that topic, and then it came to abortion. And as we were discussing abortion, there was one individual who said he was up to the challenge to come on to Apologetics Live. And so I said, good, let's do that. So he was arguing that as a Christian, I could hold to a view of abortion. And you're shaking your head. I think I don't think I can as a true Christian. Oh wait, that's the no true Scotsman fallacy. No, it's not actually. When we get to the fallacy section, I'll explain that fallacy tonight. That'll be the one we can explain. But we are hoping he'll come in. But as often is the case, so often is the case, many people want to challenge me, tell me how wrong I am, and I say, good, let's do it live. Mm-hmm. And you guys see them all here, right? It's just Darren and I all by ourselves. I don't see them around. Don't know what happened to them. It seems to be the case every time, right? That this is what ends up happening. You know, we look for them, and this is what we find, just... Yeah, crickets is all we get. We're waiting. Hopefully he'll come and show up. But something tells me that may not be the case. But if not, we're going to be able to still discuss the topic. So let me first start off, Pastor Darren. This is not your first time on the show, but for folks to know, could you explain? You know, I reached out to you with the issue of abortion. Could you explain your ministry that you have with Operation Save America?
Yeah, so I'm the Assistant National Director with Operation Save America. So Operation Save America is a ministry that started, it has its roots in the rescue movement of the 1980s and 90s. And that was back before the FACE Act. Christians were blockading the door of abortion clinics and things like that. And that's how Operation Rescue got started. Now, essentially, what our ministry is all about doing is equipping Christians to engage in kingdom ministry outside of abortion clinics, on the sidewalks, pleading with mothers not to go through with the decision to slaughter their children, out in the culture, trying to help Christians, people who profess to be Christians, understand the issue of abortion and why it is a issue that Christians should engage in, and how we have a duty and an obligation to speak upon it on behalf of the preborn. And then also going to legislators and calling on them to pass legislation that puts an immediate and total end to abortion. And so that's what Operation Save America is all about. I'm blessed to have the opportunity to be the assistant national director, and I love the ministry. You guys can check out OperationSaveAmerica.org to find out more about what we do there. But it's an equipping ministry, just like Striving for Eternity is an equipping ministry. We seek to equip Christians with the tools that they need to help put an end to the slaughter of the preborn from a gospel-centric kingdom mind standpoint.
Yeah, and just humble Clay, speaking of that pastor says, sounds like he's all lost.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I just posted something that someone said is going to get me into Facebook jail. I said, quote, gay Christianity, unquote, is all gay and no Christianity.
That's right,
yeah. And that's really what it comes down to. They do that, and they, you know, it's like, I don't see them doing this with Islam.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going into mosques saying, we're a gay Muslim.
Yeah.
Because they'll throw you off the building.
Well, that's what I was going to say. In some places in the world, they take you out and throw you off of a tall building.
Yeah.
Saying something like that. I got a funny story about that, if I can throw it in here. With Operation Save America, we were doing some street ministry on a college campus in, I think it was Arkansas. And while we were there, it was World Hijab Day. And so you know what a hijab is, right?
Yeah.
That's the covering that women wear on their heads. And what was really funny is all these high school dudes were putting hijabs on their head to celebrate Islam and so forth. And we had a really funny conversation with several of them, because we say, oh, you think Islam's a great religion? They say, yeah, it's a religion of peace. And we said, you know, if you were in a Muslim country wearing that thing on your head, they would throw you off the roof of a building.
Yeah.
Because you're dressed like a woman.
Yeah.
And they were all, you know, taken aback and flustered and things like that. So the average American that's pro-Muslim doesn't have the first idea what Muslims actually believe,
what Islam teaches. Yeah,
yeah, right.
So in our in the news section tonight, what I want to deal with is an attempted murder of Justice Kavanaugh. Now, this, if you are watching CNN or Fox News or any of the, you may not have seen this. This is not a high in the on the list. Why? Because some guy from California came all the way across the state because he wanted to kill Justice Kavanaugh because, well, he took the words of Democrats literally. When we had Chuck Schumer, who threatened Kavanaugh and others that if they go through with this, there's a whirlwind coming. They're gonna pay, you know, for this decision. And someone took that to heart. Now, it's interesting because this is in light of what right now, as we're recording this live, there is the Democrat show going on for January 6th, where they're going to be trying to, you know, put on a show saying that Trump somehow, it's all Trump's fault. He riled people up to do this riot, which was really just a photo shoot. I mean, I'm sorry, but look at the pictures. Everyone's in the Capitol. They're within the velvet ropes. They're taking pictures and selfies in the, they're on a tour.
Yeah,
they're not rioting. That looks nothing like what we saw for a year and a half in every city in America with Black Lives Matter. Okay, yeah. there was no fires burning, there was no weapons, there were none of that. And so they want to say that because Trump said to go peacefully protest, that was code word for, you know, take over the Capitol.
Right.
Well, Chuck Schumer said far worse. We have other Democrats that said, you know, this, with the abortion possibly being overturned, as far as Roe versus Wade, that is war. Mm. Well, you had someone that he got fed up with Kavanaugh because he said he also now Pastor Darren, I'm trying to figure this out. This is the left, and I know logic need not apply. The guy is upset with the recent school shooting, And he's upset that Brett Kavanaugh may vote or decide in a way that he won't, that he's going to support guns and not support gun control. So this guy went to Kavanaugh's house with a gun to shoot him.
Yeah, this is so what's really interesting about this, and a lot of people don't understand this about liberals. Liberals are not actually anti-gun. It's just a matter of who doesn't have the guns.
Yes.
If you go read Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky, which I think every Christian should read that book with a discerning eye. One of the things he talks about on there is he says, do we have the guns in our favor? And if the answer to that question is no, then we're anti-gun. But if we do have the guns in our favor, then we're pro-gun. If we have numbers in our favor, are we anti-violence? Yes. If the numbers are against us, are we anti-violence? No. And, you know, the interesting thing about that whole argument is that progressives and liberals are quote unquote anti-gun, but they want the police to have guns, but then they're anti-police. They want to defund the police. You know what I mean? Like, it's a very inconsistent, weird way of thinking about the world. And the reality is it's in their estimation, it's about power. It's about gaining power and then having the people that they control be the only ones that have access to guns. That's the thing. So that's how you can get this guy sort of thinking that on the one hand, guns are bad, but on the other hand, I'm going to use my gun for good and I'm going to go get this guy.
Well, and that's the whole thing. They always think what they're doing is good. They have the moral superiority because they just are better.
Right.
And anything else they do, they can murder people. They could destroy people's lives and it doesn't matter because they're just right. I mean, they're always going to be right because they're better than us.
Right. Yeah. One, it's really convenient when you believe in situational ethics. If you believe in situational ethics, you can always be right.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what's happened, no matter what crazy thing you do, if you believe ethics bend themselves to your situation and circumstances, you can be right all the time and other people can always be wrong. And that's the reason you never see the left ever apologizing for anything, because they don't believe in fixed morality. They believe morality is you know, that it can mold and bend and so forth. So it's very convenient to believe in situational ethics, you know, when you do bad, evil things. So,
well, this is what I posted this some time ago. I said, you know, the truth doesn't matter. Facts don't matter. It's the narrative that matters. And that's what we're seeing in our country right now. It's the narrative. The narrative can change and it does. As long as it gets our agenda, that's all we care about.
Yeah, it reminds me of, which this is old news now, things stale so quickly in our political environment. But you remember when Hillary Clinton she literally went before Congress talking about American CIA agents that lost their lives overseas and said, at this point, what difference does it make?
Yeah.
In other words, it doesn't help my narrative anymore. Discard with the lives of these people and let's move on to the next thing.
You know? Now, it's very interesting what happened with that. You know, like you bring that up, and so few people. We had an investigation with George W. Bush to who is claiming he and someone or someone in the administration outed a CIA agent who was taken off cover because she kept blowing her cover.
Right.
She was making out with her boyfriend at the time in the car and said, "Oh, I'm a undercover CIA agent. That's what I do for a living." She wasn't very good at her job, but they had to investigate, and we spent like $3.5 million to figure out who leaked the name to Robert Novak, the reporter. And when Robert Novak could finally, when the gag order was removed, he said that they asked him, the first question they asked is, was your source Chris Armitage's? And he said, yes. Then there was no more need to investigate who the source was. They knew it. They knew it. And they played it up like George Bush was behind this and put her life at risk. Well, she was sitting at a desk job here in America. Those six CIA agents that you referred to, that Obama called them CIA agents, were in a Iranian prison.
Yeah.
They were being charged with spying on their country. And what did Barack Obama do? He called them CIA. They said they were contractors. Mm-hmm. He blew their cover.
Yeah.
Like really blew their cover while their lives are being threatened.
Yeah.
But hey, narrative matters.
Yeah, and that's what it is. I mean, when you think about all this discussion and these different things, it's we live in a country, and I mean, we're talking about Democrats. There's a lot of evil in the Democratic Party. Republicans can be bad too.
Yep.
There's a lot of political theater that happens, especially
on both sides. I like how Dan Bongino says it. He says Republicans may not be the solution to all your problems, but Democrats are the cause of all your problems.
That's right. Yeah. Right. No. Yeah. Absolutely. I agree. It's like, you know, there are Republicans in the world that I could vote for. You know, they're good people, love the Lord, believe in good things. I haven't met a Democrat that I could, you know, cast a ballot for, especially if they believe in the Democratic platform. But these things, you know, like the whole thing with December 6th, and it was an insurgency and all this other stuff. And it's like, are you serious? Like you were talking about earlier, these people are walking in the velvet ropes. They're taking selfies, you know, like if it was an insurgency, it was like the worst one ever in the history of the world. And now you got the Democrats trying to rile people up about the Supreme Court, and they're, you know, you got these virtually, I mean, there was one night where there were virtually riots happening outside of the Supreme Court. You got people threatening the lives of guys like Justice Kavanaugh and so forth. And they're not going to take responsibility for that.
No.
But they want Trump to take responsibility for what happened on December 6th, which, by the way, wasn't an insurgency to begin with. There are literally dozens of American citizens with rights sitting in prison or in jail in Washington, D.C., because they haven't had a trial yet. Their rights are being trampled on because they went into a government building was paid for by their tax dollars. I'm not saying I agree with everything they did. I don't. I'm not saying I agree with the way that everybody carried on and so forth. But the whole idea that this is an insurgency, what happened on December 6th, but this over here, we're stirring up people against the Supreme Court, this is okay. It's a perfect picture of political theater.
I mean, you could see it in the fact that you have, let's just do a comparison, Black Lives Matter protest versus January 6th, okay?
Yeah.
Black Lives Matter. Burning cities down, taking over city streets, calling even some of the city streets their own country, wanting to defund the police. And their purpose, as they said, is to overthrow the government system because it is racist.
Yeah.
Versus a bunch of people that wanted an audit of the count.
Yeah.
I mean, which one sounds like it's following the system of democracy? It sounds like January 6th, they wanted democracy.
Right.
That's what they wanted.
Yeah.
But this is a gaslighting. It's, you know, saying, oh, look, these guys are doing it. They're doing it. You just tell the lie long enough that people start believing it. And that's what we have. And that's what you're going to see on TV, on the other channels, if you're watching tonight, which I don't recommend. But
well, and I could do you one even better than that. I mean, remember, and our memory is so short in this country, they're gaslighting us because we forget what happened just a few short years ago. But remember when Occupy Wall Street literally took over the Capitol in Wisconsin? They took over the Capitol, and they were in the Capitol. If I remember right, it was several days, if not weeks. Occupy Wall Street was literally in the Capitol and would not allow the state's business to carry. And that wasn't considered terrorism at all.
Yeah,
that's, we're talking days.
Wait,
we're not talking about a few hours.
Just remember, they said that what made January 6th so horrible was the fact that this has never been done before.
Yeah, right.
Except for Brett Kavanaugh's hearings.
Right.
Where they didn't stop the hearings when a bunch of protesters came in and did exactly what we're being told. Now, here's the one thing, folks. If you need any help with January 6th, we're going to move to the topic of abortion, but here's the one thing. What helped me immensely was listening to Ted Cruz right after that go through the timeline. Why? Because when you look at the timeline, you know, you end up seeing plenty of videos out there where the police opened the doors, they moved the barricades, opened the doors, and people started just going in. Why? Because they were invited in. So here's the thing. Why? Well, because Ted Cruz and a bunch of Republicans who I believe should have stuck to their guns, they gave in and caved to the Democrats in the end because they were going to wait till Arizona got called, and they were waiting for that, and then they were going to do a vote for a audit. I forget, it was, I think, a 20-day order. I forget how many days it was. But they were going to do a call for an audit. They had enough votes to do that, to call for the audit and have that procedural done. So soon as Arizona gets up to announce that they're going for Biden, the police come in, the Capitol Police come in. And remember, Pelosi turned down the National Guard that Trump wanted.
Yeah, right. I heard that today for the first time.
Didn't want the extra police that, so the Capitol Police came in and said they had to move everybody out for their safety, and they moved them to not the secure location they should have been in, a right. different location. The problem was they were moved before anybody was in the building. That's a major problem. If you want to know if it was a setup, that's how you know. The Capitol Police came in and said, we have to move you for your safety because there's people in the building, before there were people in the building. That's a major issue. And then when they moved them a second time, it's when they started having people in the building, and they just saw, you know, a couple hundred people in the building, and they actually marched the congresspeople through so that they could see the people to the secure location, and then an hour later emptied everyone out and brought them back in to vote. And then they dropped this thing of the audit. Because, oh, this was a travesty. What they did was they brought them and they secluded them where they couldn't get any news. They're being told there's all this violence and things going on. And then they come back and go, we got to stick together with Democrats, show unity. No, you just caved in. And the real insurrection happened that day, but it wasn't from those protesters. It was from the Democrats who manipulated to shut down an audit. Because if you saw, you know, I haven't seen 2,000 Mules yet, but if you've seen that, from what I understand, it gives compelling evidence that there was tons of fraud. Not necessarily that we know how the votes went, because we can't get the audit. Because, right. you know, Democrats, every time they lose an election, it's not legitimate. I mean, we now know from the fact that, you know, Michael Sussman, this is a pretty political show so far, but Michael Sussman had, you know, was Hillary Clinton's lawyer that created this whole Russia collusion thing, that Trump supposedly was colluding with the Russians. We now know that Barack Obama had signed off to say that it was Russians hacked the DNC 6 days before the FBI got the images where they made that conclusion. How did he know?
It goes back to something I said a little while ago, and I'm just going to say it again. I say it as many times as it applies. Saul Alinsky, Rules for Radicals. What do the Democrats do? What do progressives, liberals do? Whatever evil thing they're getting ready to do, they accuse you of doing it Correct. Before they do it. And that's exactly what happened, because it creates confusion. Well, who was it? Who was colluding with Russia? Was it the Democrats or was it the Republicans? Well, it was actually the Democrats, the evidence show, that were colluding with Russia. Mm-hmm. But they accused, with the dossier and all that stuff, they accused Trump and so forth. And they accused him before the supposed – and I'm not even a big Trump guy. Like, you know, I tell people all the time, I do my work mostly at the state level. I travel around and talk to state representatives. But a lie is a lie, no matter what level of government it happens at. And in this case, it's like, if any time you see – I always do this. Anytime I see progressives or liberals accusing conservatives of a thing, a mean, evil thing, there's a chance that conservatives are guilty of it. We're sinners, too. We do bad things. But I always want to say, let's watch in 6 months and see.
That's what they're going to do. Yeah, I mean, think about what we were hearing over and over from the Democrats before the election.
Yeah.
They were calling for fighting on the streets. They were calling for violence if the vote didn't go the right way.
Yeah, Maxine Waters is telling people, approach these congressmen, approach these senators, run them out of the restaurants, you know, and all this stuff.
And then people do that, and they're like, oh, you can't blame that on me. We mentioned a couple of logical fallacies here. You mentioned gaslighting. So let's deal with the no true Scotsman fallacy and the gaslighting. So what is a no true Scotsman fallacy? The way this came about was the idea that someone in Scotland would say no Scotsman would eat, I forget what it was, but, you know, eat something with their haggis. And someone goes, well, there's, you know, Joe over there, he's a Scotsman and he's eating that with his haggis. It was like, well, no true Scotsman would do that. So the argument, the fallacy is to say, when you claim that someone, well, they're not a true whatever unless they hold to your position.
Yeah.
That is the no true Scotsman fallacy. What is not the no true Scotsman fallacy is if you actually have a definition of what it means to be a Scotsman, right, like having Scottish citizenship.
Right.
If that defines you as a Scotsman, then to say that, so if you say, for example, that a true Scotsman owns land in Scotland, that makes you a true Scotsman. If that's the definition of a Scotsman. So to say, well, if I own land, well, no true Scotsman wouldn't own land. Well, you can actually define that. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you, if there's a definition like, what is a true Christian? Well, the Bible defines what a Christian is. So we have a definition to it. So when you say, well, somebody who celebrates their sin is not a true Christian, and people go, oh, that's a no true Scotsman fallacy. No, it's not. Because the scripture is clear that a Christian won't celebrate their sin. They repent of that.
Yeah.
So that is a definitional thing. So that's one fallacy. The other fallacy you mentioned is gaslighting. That's actually from a movie, I think in the 50s or 60s, where a guy kept changing the lights in his house and telling his wife the lights were bright when they weren't. And he kept doing it every day. And by doing it over and over and over again, eventually she went crazy and started to believe the lie. We saw this. Bill Clinton was president. They just kept telling a lie long enough. It's like, tell the lie long enough, people will believe it. That's what gaslighting is. And that's what the media is doing. They're telling the lie long enough so that you could believe it. And you come to chaos. I mean, here's what KT says. Could you guys also talk about how bees aren't fish? Now, I don't know if you've seen this one,
no,
Pastor Darren.
I haven't.
Okay. So in California, this is a case of gaslighting, right? You can now call bees fish. So what? I guess what it is they had laws on the books to protect certain fish as endangered animals. They wanted to protect the bees under that. So what they did is just say bees are a form of fish, totally changing the taxonomy of how we categorize bees and fish, totally different families.
Yeah.
But in this age of, hey, it's however you identify. So maybe the bees identify as a fish. Now, here's the problem. People want to say that's ridiculous. Bees can't identify as a fish.
Yeah.
But that is a problem because now all of a sudden, guys can't identify as girls either. And so what do they want? They want the one. So what do they got to do? This is where the gaslighting takes effect, because people are so tied in to the one narrative. To keep the narrative, because narrative is what's important, to keep the narrative, they will accept the most ridiculous things in the world.
Yeah.
To accept the narrative.
Our society right now is particularly, the way our society is structured right now, it's particularly susceptible to gaslighting for two reasons. Number one, because of the Marxist, what you were just talking about, bees, the whole thing with bees and fish. With a social Marxist worldview, and some people don't like that term, social Marxist, call it whatever you want to call it. It's the concept that there is no truth and words can mean whatever I want them to mean. So I can just pour my definition into the meaning of words and I can use words to suit my purpose. And so this is what kids are being taught in school. It's the same thing with the bees and the fish. It's the same thing with men and women. We could define all the terms. We can redefine all the terms, or we can make the words mean whatever we want them to mean. Well, if you think about, if you embrace that worldview, if a person embraces that, and then their understanding of the meaning of language is only ever informed by certain influential people in the culture, they can be essentially convinced to believe anything. So that's the first reason our society is susceptible to gaslighting. The second reason our society is particularly susceptible to gaslighting is because lies spread very quickly in our culture. You know, we have social media, we have the advent of the meme, we have, blogs, podcasts, so forth. And that has its strengths and its weaknesses. One of the weaknesses is now anybody with a microphone and an internet connection can start a podcast or start a blog or create a page on Facebook and start producing memes and so forth. And what happens is, it's a blessing because that allows good ideas to spread quickly, but it's also a curse because it allows the technology itself is neutral, but it allows bad ideas to spread very quickly. And so because of that reality, because of the embracing of a Marxist view of truth and a Marxist understanding of language, he who defines wins, and people just get to certain influential people define the terms as they want them to be defined. And then that narrative goes out and it spreads far and wide very quickly, and people grab hold of it and their minds are changed very easily because there's not even a fixed concept of language, let alone a fixed concept of morality or a fixed concept of truth. And so we live in a society where it is very easy for a small number of people to gaslight a very large number of people because people don't think anymore. They're not thinkers. They're just it's very easy to just sort of twist and mold truth and make it whatever you want.
That's right. So let's get into another gaslighted issue is abortion. Drew here is saying, I'm guessing Andrew's debate opponent chickened out. Drew, are you surprised? I am not anymore. I mean, I get all these keyboard warriors that they are really strong behind the keyboard. You know, but then again, when you come here and supposedly I'm the coward. I was telling you this, Pastor Darren, on that thread on Twitter, they were all ganging up. They basically, this pastor, you know, it says he's a pastor. That's the gay pastor. He was like, I have to mute you because I just, it's not good for me to be in this discussion. So can you others help out? And so that's just like, hey, I'm going to play the victim and let everyone else jump on him. Right. We had a one-on-one conversation. So then I had a whole bunch of people. So they were actually going, this guy looks like a professional troll. He's a troll. Look, he says he's a pastor in a seminary that doesn't exist anymore. You know, probably never did exist. No, yes, my seminary did close down some years ago. Yep.
And so what?
But at least one of the guys said, well, he does have he has been online doing ministry for over a decade. You know, so it's like he does have history. But it's interesting that they I guess expect that there's paid trolls. Maybe on the left, that's what they have. I'm not a paid troll. But the interesting thing is all of them were saying how I can't. Oh, and I was supposed to do this. One of the things they said is I can't argue myself out of a wet paper bag. And Pastor Justin wanted to see me do that. I forgot that I was supposed to do that. But I'm like, hey, if I'm such an easy knockover opponent, here you are, apologeticslive.com. Yeah. Go to the website, click the link to join, and let's have at it. But, as Humble Clay is saying, keyboard warriors equal mom's basement dweller. And that's actually, you know, it's interesting you say that, Humble Clay, because I said to this guy, I said, you're not going to chicken out. I mean, you're not like playing video games in mom's basement, are you? He never challenged that he was playing video games in mom's basement. I think I might have been right on that one. So this is what it will do. Pastor Darren, since my debate opponent didn't show up, I will be the debate opponent and I will challenge you with some questions.
Okay.
How's that sound? Good. So I'm going to identify as a mindless robot.
You're going to be a bee.
Yeah, I'm going to be the bee.
I'm going to be a fish.
So, Pastor Darren, look, you just have to understand that when you are against abortion, you are against a woman's right to choose. I mean, a woman should have a right to choose what she wants with her body. What say you?
Yeah, well, the first thing I usually say when somebody says that to me is that there is a certain sense in which I am against a woman's right to choose. I'm against a woman's right to choose a lot of things. I'm against a woman's right to choose to drive her car through my living room. I'm against a woman's right to do all kinds of things. A woman doesn't have a right to drive her car through my living room. I'm against a woman's right to consume a bunch of alcohol and then get in the car and drive. And why is that? Why do we have laws against these kinds of things? Because these are things that hurt other people. And your right to swing your arm ends at the tip of my nose, so to speak. You've heard that phrase before. In other words, you have certain rights, and those rights are inalienable rights. They come to you from God. One of them is that you have the right to live. You have the right to be. You have the right to go about your life without a bunch of interference from the governing authorities, whatever else the case may be. But there's an end to that, and the end to that is when you begin to start bringing harm to another person. They, other people also have rights, and that baby that's in the mother's womb has rights. It's a human being. That baby is a human being that's created in the image of God. We find that in Psalm 139, verses 13 through 16, where we see David say to God, you know, you knew me before you conceived me in the womb. You knit me together. We see the intricate detail of God's created order. We see in Jeremiah 1:5, I'm just looking down at my notes here, so I'm not saying all this from memory, I confess. We see in Jeremiah 1:5, God tells Jeremiah, I knew you before I formed you in the womb. So life begins, physical life begins at conception, but metaphysically, the life of a human being begins in the mind of God, even before that person comes into human existence. And so, you know, Genesis 1:27, scripture teaches us that human beings, that mankind is made in the image of God. And therefore, mankind, a person, a human being, their life has value and worth as an image bearer of God. Last thing I would point to is, as a Christian, since this person professes to be a Christian, when we read Exodus 21:22-24 in the law of God, God treats the preborn child like any other human being. He says, if two men are fighting with one another and a woman gets in the way and a pregnant woman gets in the way and the baby that's growing in her womb is harmed, he says, you are to pay back life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, and so on and so forth, which is the same law that applies to other humans in the other parts of Exodus 22 and the rest of the law. So the word of God treats the human, the baby growing in the womb, as a human being created in the image of God, which means I am against a woman's right to choose to kill another person. I am 100% wholeheartedly against that. I make no qualms about it. And I would argue to that person, I would say, we're all in agreement that women don't have the right to choose to do whatever they want to do. For example, they can't drive their car through my living room. For example, they can't consume alcohol and drink. For example, they can't kill their 3-month-old child, right? We all agree about that. So it's nothing new saying women don't have the right to choose to do certain things, because that baby is a human being created in the image of God.
Okay, so before I go back to playing the opponent here, let me point out some things for folks to notice. I want you to notice how Pastor Darren is making a presuppositional argument here. Yeah. He is assuming that the child in the womb is a child, is a person, is a human being. You never give up that point. Nope. You know, some people will argue and they try to give up that point to still make the case. But that is a key in this debate, because the next thing that they're going to end up doing is saying, well, it's not a baby. And they're going to try to say that. But don't give in on that.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because, and the reason that that's important is because when you carry the presuppositional argument a step further, they already know that it's a baby. So when a person claims that the fetus, which I don't know if you'll bring that up or not here, but they always like to speak Latin at this point. The fetus growing in the womb of the mother isn't a baby. It's not that they actually believe that the fetus isn't a baby. They're suppressing the truth and unrighteousness. God has written his law in their heart. They know that that baby that's growing in the mother's womb is a baby. And if you catch them in the right moment, they'll call it a baby.
Yeah.
When they're not trying to argue with you. And sometimes even it's really great when they do that, when they are trying to argue with you, you say, excuse me, a what? Well, she has a baby. A what? You know? But yeah.
Yeah. Or they'll call it a child or, you know, note that, because when they do that, they go into Latin. That's where I just go, a fetus. What's a fetus?
Yeah.
And they try to give a definition. I go, no. What's a fetus? What is the word? What's that Latin word mean?
Yeah.
A little child? Oh, okay.
Yeah, right.
Thank you. Okay, that's what a fetus is. A fetus is a little child.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, John here says, I figured as much. Andrew's opponents never make it live. And so someone messaged me and said, and this may be correct, it might be that our liberal or progressive opponent would rather watch the news and see what happened on January 6th. He probably forgot and didn't realize that that was going to be far more important to him. We'll see if he comes back and challenges me. I will say this, as far as not having opponents to challenge, for like a year and a half, 2 years, I was trying to get debates with Black Hebrew Israelites. And we had three guys that challenged, that said that it was going to be three against one. We set it up. It was all set up. The day of the debate, the three guys blocked both me and the moderator, the guy who set it up. And so we couldn't give them the information to join, you know, to join it. And so I told the moderator, we're doing the debate anyway. He's like, do you have someone else? I said, we're doing it anyway. And we posted it. And so I said, what you're going to do is just introduce me, and you can go onto our YouTube channel and find this. Just search for Black Hebrew Israelites. But what I ended up doing is I said, introduce me, let me do the opening, then introduce the opponent. And don't worry about it. And he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, don't worry about it. So I did my whole introduction. He says, well, I'll let our opponents introduce themselves. And I put up a picture of an empty chair. And it had its desired effect that I got a Black Hebrew Israelite that was looking for the debate, felt so shamed that these guys didn't show up, that he came back and debated me the following week.
Oh man, that's awesome.
And you know how you know that you did a good job in a debate? Is that all the people that are on his side, the Black Hebrew Israelites, all were challenging me for weeks afterwards, telling me, I don't know, I'm not a good debater. You know, it's just that this guy was really bad. I should debate someone that could handle me. Mm-hmm. But they didn't come on. Yeah, I mean,
I said open mic.
We got a live show. You can come in with anything here, folks. You just go to apologeticslive.com, click the duck, and come in, and we'll answer anything. Yeah. You know, we answer them in the chat all the time. So I don't get it, but yeah, it does seem to be that way. So going back to our thing here. So you're saying, well, let's go with that. You know, you're saying it's a baby in the womb. That's just a fetus. That's not a human being.
Yeah, so the first thing I say back to that is the fetus thing. Okay, so let's talk about what is a fetus. Fetus is the Latin word for small child. When we're talking about a human being, that's a baby. And so you say, well, it's not a human being. Well, then what else is it? Has any woman ever been pregnant with anything other than a human being? What do you mean when you say that it's not a human being? And I think it's important at this point in the discussion, when people start making those types of statements, to ask questions. It's not a human being. Well, what is it? And at what point does it become a human being?
That is, it's just a bunch of cells. It's a bunch of, a clump of cells that are gathering together.
Are you an atheist?
Doesn't matter.
Well, I would say if you're an atheist, so are you. I mean, we're all just stardust, right? It's all stardust bumping in the stardust, right? If it's the case that there is no God, and the baby growing in the womb is just a clump of cells, well, so are you. We're all just clumps of cells. What gives your life value and worth? What gives my life value and worth?
Yeah, and I'll step out of character for a second just to say, I mean, whether atheist or not, we had that time you and I were out at the Save America regional conference, and we went out to Purdue University, and the one girl was saying, well, it's just a bunch of a clump of cells. Yeah. I said, but so are you.
Right.
I mean, you're just a bunch of clump of cells.
Yeah.
So what makes you have the rights, but the person in the womb doesn't have the rights?
Yeah. So usually at this point, and I like to do this on college campuses if I can, if it's evident to me that the person that I'm talking to has been a victim of rape or something like that, then I don't do it, because I think it takes the conversation in a direction that is dangerous for that person and keeps me from getting to the gospel eventually. But oftentimes, especially when I'm talking to young men and they say, it's just a clump of cells, I'll say, well, do you believe that rape is wrong? They say, yeah. I say, well, we're all just a clump of cells. The same thing happens in rape that happens in abortion. You're taking a person's body and you're doing to it what is good for you rather than what's good for them. If we're all just a clump of cells, right, then what makes rape wrong? But abortion, or what makes abortion wrong, but rape not wrong? And the thing that you're doing when you're asking these questions, first of all, that does tend to bring out a certain amount of emotion. But the thing that you're doing when you ask these kinds of questions, presuppositional apologetics is when you, one of the things you do when you're doing presuppositional apologetics is you want to treat the person's worldview like it's a car, and you want to get into it and drive it into a tree, right? That's what you do when you're doing presuppositional apologetics. if I think according to your worldview, we're all just clumps of cells. Okay, you're a clump of cell, I'm a clump of cell, the baby in the womb is a clump of cells. Okay, then why is rape wrong? Or oftentimes we run into these arguments when we're standing on the sidewalk out of an abortion clinic, outside of an abortion clinic, and they'll say, it's wrong for you to be here. Wrong by what standard?
Yeah.
If we're all just clumps of cells, if we're all, once I can get the person to admit that we're all just clump of cells, and eventually here, I don't want to just defend, which I'm sure we'll go here. Eventually here, I don't want to just defend the rights of the preborn, but I actually want to get to the gospel with this person. Right. That's where I'm going when I'm bringing up those types of discussion points.
That's where we really want to get to within, in every conversation. Yeah. But, you know, when we are outside of an abortion mill, we are having these discussions online, and, you know, when we get the verdict out, these are going to be discussions that people are going to be having, and we want to equip folks to be able to have good reasoned answers when people start challenging, because you are going to be challenged. I mean, when it first came out, and I think I shared this with you, and I put a video out on it, but when this first occurred, the leak first happened, I remember being at the supermarket, and the lady, two women in front of me, she felt she was perfectly justified in sharing her views. Now, I believe we all can have opinions.
Yeah.
I have no problem with you having a different opinion than me.
Yeah.
Just keep your opinion to yourself. But if you're not going to keep your opinion to yourself, don't expect that I won't. Right? And so she's sitting there and she goes, she says to the teller, she goes, the cashier, she's like, I just think it's so horrible that these, how could these people be so stupid and idiotic to think that a woman's right, you know, shouldn't be that what makes the decision in abortion. And I just, you know, I said over the lady that's in front of me, I said, you know, ma'am, I agree with you. I think women should be able to murder. And she's like, she just looked at me and she's like, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that women should have a right to choose. I said, I agree. A woman should have the right to murder another human being. Mm-hmm. And she says, she goes, well, I'm not saying that. I mean, I would never choose to abortion, but I think others should have the right. I said, ma'am, I agree with you. I would never choose to murder somebody, but I think they should have the right to murder.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I'm just sitting there, and the way that I was doing it, I'm like, I'm saying I agree with her, and she just was flabbergasted. Why? Because so many of these people have been in an echo chamber for so long because the gaslighting is going on all the time that they think that everybody that's rational would agree with them, and they're never challenged.
Yeah.
And so, just challenging her, she had no answer.
Yeah.
You know, and just walked out, and you know, it was interesting because here's what ended up happening. I then, you know, I made a scene, but I apologized to the lady in front of me and the cashier. I said, I'm sorry. You know, I was raised that, you know, we all have opinions and we should keep our opinions to ourselves. And the cashier wanted to agree with the woman that left. Mm-hmm. But, and she goes, well, I think that, you know, she was right. And then the lady that was in front of me says, you know, I agree with you. I mean, what was she doing making a scene about something so emotional in public? She should have just kept her mouth quiet, and she didn't even have a good argument. Yeah. Right. And then the cashier shut down.
Right.
Well, folks, that's what we're going to be running into. You know, that's what's going to happen. Let me just put some comments up here. Humble Clay says, the day a woman gives birth to anything other than a human baby, they'll have my attention.
Exactly. That's one of the things that we say to these people a lot when they say that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's not a woman. Well, then what is it?
Yeah.
Has a woman ever given birth to anything other than a human being?
Yeah.
You know? And the answer to that question is no, it's a biological impossibility. You know? It's not a human yet. Okay, well, when does it become a human? And that's my friend Laura Klassen. I don't know if you know who she is. She has a video out on Choice for Two about the magical birth canal. It's a great video. Everybody should go watch it. Check out the Choice for Two YouTube channel. She takes the baby through this big birth canal. Not a baby, not a baby, not a baby. And then it gets to the other side, and she's like, congratulations, you're a baby.
Yes.
And it's like, well, at what point does the baby become a baby then? You know? It's so irrational, you know?
Humble Clay says, Jesus made a scene also, Andrew, so you're in good company.
Right, yeah.
So Humble Clay had said this, all pro-abortion folks have already been born.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's the thing. You know, this is an argument that they're making because they have the luxury of being born.
Yeah. One of the things I like to do, especially on college campuses, is when I'm having that conversation, I try to use the language that they understand, because remember, we're trying to get into treating their worldview like it's a car. We want to get into it and drive it into a tree, right? So one of the things that I'll do is I'll say, you're just saying that because you have birther privilege. You're one of the ones that's already been born. You're privileged to be alive. If you were one of the oppressed preborn, you know, and you weren't part of that privileged class of those that have already been born, then you wouldn't think that it's okay to kill a baby. And I've had several students, in fact, when we were out on the Purdue campus that one day, the one guy just stood there and looked at me. I mean, he didn't even say anything back for like 30 or 45 seconds. He just stood there and looked at me. It is. Like, if you want to talk about an instance of privilege, people who have a privilege and are taking advantage of it to bring harm to somebody else, if you're born and you think it's okay to kill people that haven't been born yet, that's a pretty good example of being part of a hegemony.
Yeah.
You know, that able to leverage your privilege for the sake of denigrating the rights of others.
I was on a college campus, and this young man was saying that, because I did it. Basically, it's very similar to what you did, right? I said, you're born already. You're saying that, but you're already born. You have that opinion because it doesn't affect you. He goes, well, I wish I wasn't born. I wish my mother would have aborted me. I said, no, you don't. He says, yes, I do. I said, no, you don't. He's like, how could you say that? Because you haven't taken your life yet. You're still here. You're here.
Right. Yeah.
Don't tell me you've really wished you were aborted for all your life because you're here.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the, you're here. There's a reason that you're here. And that too is a perfect opportunity to take the conversation in a different direction, take the conversation toward the gospel.
Yeah.
You don't wish that you were dead or that your mom hadn't given birth to you because you're still here. So let's talk about that, you know?
All right. So let's go back and I'll go back into character, some other arguments. You know, you pro-lifers, you just want to control a woman's body.
Yeah, so this is an interesting argument. We just want to be able to control women's bodies. And so I'll ask the question, do you believe that it's okay for a mother to murder her 3-month-old baby?
No, it's already been born.
Well, how come you want to control women's bodies?
That's not in their body.
Yeah, but you're telling me she can't use her body to pick up a knife and stab that baby?
No, but the fetus
can't use her body to do that.
But the fetus is inside her body; it's part of her body.
Yeah.
So that's her body, and you pro-lifers want to tell her what she can and can't do with her own body.
Yeah, but
the 3-year-old's a different body.
Murder her by telling her that she can't murder her 3-month-old. You're also telling her that she can't do certain things with her body.
But that's not her body anymore.
Sure.
See, now it's a different body.
Oh, it is a different body now. Okay. So what I like to do with this is I like to show a picture of an aborted baby and say, whose arm is this? I mean, it's really, whose arm is this? Is this the mom's arm or is this the baby's arm? Right? Of course, it's not the same body. We all know that. Again, sometimes I try to be gracious with people, but sometimes a certain level of lunacy requires a sharp response. You know, it's like, the person, like, there's a sign that says the body inside your body is not your body. But everybody agrees. This is what I was getting to at the beginning of my argument too, though. Everybody agrees that there are certain things that women are not allowed to do with their body, right? They're not allowed to drive. You believe it's okay for you to do it, whatever you want with your body? Okay, go get out in your car and get out on the interstate and start driving 110 miles an hour and see if you don't get pulled over. What do you think is going to happen when you get pulled over? You're probably going to get arrested for reckless driving. And why is that? Because you're not allowed to do whatever you want to do with your body.
Yeah.
The only thing that pro-aborts want a woman to be able to do with her body is be able to kill her own baby. If they were actually thinking consistently with what they were saying there, then women would be able to do anything with their body that they want to do out there. But we all know that you can't live consistently with that worldview. And so what I try to do when a person says that is show them that they're not living consistently with that worldview. If you believe a woman can do whatever she wants to do with her body, there should be no laws pertaining to women at all whatsoever. They can use their bodies to do whatever they want to do. Yep. And none of us actually believe that. They only believe that specifically with regards to the narrow argument about abortion. Yeah, so I am saying I don't think a woman should be able to kill her baby, even if it's inside of her body. I don't think that she should be able to do that. Well, you just want to control women's bodies. Yes. in the sense that I don't think it's okay for women to murder other people. I do want to control their bodies.
Yeah. And so,
as well.
So I'll step out of character and say, you know, the argument that I use with it is I do think, because like the car driving 100 miles an hour, they're going to say that's because that's not their just their body. But what I'll bring up is you can't smoke cigarettes before you're 18. You can't drink before you're 21. You can't prostitute yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. We say these things are wrong. A woman doesn't have the legal right to do that with her body.
Yeah.
So that's one way of going. The other way, and I did this with the woman that I was talking to there at Purdue University with you, which really got her stumped, was I said, but what defines a body? Because you have within you someone with different DNA, different gender possibly, different blood type. They're a different human being. Yeah. They're not your body. You know, yeah. And so she ended up having to go the way they always do is, well, you know, a parasite can be in your body. Yes, but the parasite's not your body.
Yeah.
The parasite is a separate organism. That's the whole proof. So if they go that route of saying it's a parasite, the issue is, yes, and the parasite, like if you have a ringworm or a tapeworm, that's a tapeworm. It's not your body.
Yeah.
The reason you can get rid of the tapeworm is because the tapeworm doesn't have human rights.
Right.
The human that body does have human rights. And that's the way of arguing that you know, I end up doing is to go down that path. We have someone, a Facebook user, that's saying, can I get a shout out from Australia? He had said previously, he or she said, hey, Andrew from Australia, love your ministry. Well, Facebook user, you got your shout out, but I can't give you your name because you got to go to apologeticslive.com and there's instructions on how to allow Facebook to show up in StreamYard so that we could see your name. So you got your shout out. So,
I would love to visit Australia, by the way.
I want to.
Everything there wants to kill you, but I haven't
Before COVID, I wanted to go badly. And I keep saying, like, if there's a church in you know, Australia, please invite me to speak. I need the excuse to go. I've been looking.
It's like in a city somewhere. I don't want to go out into the, there's some crazy places in Australia, but anyway.
So, let's see. We talked about, I'm looking at some of the, we talked about the fetus is just a clump of cells. The fetus is not a this one's one we didn't cover. A fetus is not a person. It's just a potential person.
Yeah, so this all has to do with, it goes back to the clump of cells thing as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so this is if a person professes to be a Christian, which is often the case when you're talking to these people, it's a fairly easy argument. We believe that the Bible is the word of God, but even if the person isn't a Christian, it's a fairly easy argument. The thing you have to remember is, it's just like when a person says they don't believe in God. But if a person tells you they don't believe in God, you have to ask yourself the question, am I going to believe what they tell me about themselves or what God says about them? God says that they do believe in God. So therefore, I'm having a discussion with them on the basis of what God says, not just on what they say. And when a person tells me that they believe that a baby is just a potential person, God's law has been written on their heart. So I know that they don't believe that to be true. They're suppressing the truth in unrighteousness. And so the discussion that I'm going to have with them sort of revolves around that. I'm not going to go, I mean, I might, depending upon the discussion, I might give them some evidence, you know, and there's value in giving evidence and things like that. There's a lot of evidence that I could give that the baby inside of the mother is a person. But the argument that pro-choice or pro-abortion people are trying to make here is they're trying to make a distinction between life and personhood. Because the argument for a long time, and this is, I'm going to take some time on this if that's okay, because a lot of people in our camp don't understand this. The argument for a long time was about when life begins. And that was back when ultrasound technology was really terrible. And you could look in the womb and you could make the case that that was just a clump of cells, even though biologically we knew that that wasn't true. You could deceive a person into believing that. Well, technology is advanced such that we can look into the womb of a woman at 10, 11 weeks pregnant, and we can see her baby moving his or her hands around and all of those sorts of things. So no longer can they really make the argument, and no longer do they make the argument really that life doesn't begin at conception. That's an old argument. People on our side are still making that argument. But for the most part, they're not arguing that anymore. The big ethical quandary that they're asking in colleges and universities now is, okay, we know life begins at conception, but when does personhood begin? When, in other words, we know life begins at conception, but just you'll find people out there that'll say, many people out there, especially if they've been trained, they'll say, well, yeah, sure, the baby's alive, but that doesn't mean it has rights. When does the baby have rights? And what they're trying to do when they do this is they're trying to take the argument out of the realm of biological. They're trying to take the, now they want to ignore the science, and they want to take the argument out of the scientific realm, and they want to muddy the waters and say, well, it's an ethical quandary. We really don't know when the baby becomes a person. When does the baby's life have value and worth? And the answer to that question is that the baby's life has value and worth from the moment of conception. And when you're talking to a Christian, or even if you're talking to an unbeliever, they say, well, I'm not sure I believe that. I say, okay, well, at what point do you think that the baby's life has value and worth? At what point does it become a person? What point is it no longer a potential person and actually a person? And if you're talking to a person who's actually spent some time on this, they'll either say something like, you know, when the baby can live outside of the womb on its own or whatever else the case may be. And I'll say, okay, so when the baby can come out of the mother's womb and live without any support or whatever, then it's actually a person, right? And they'll say, yeah. And I say, how do you know that? And they say, well, most of the people will say, well, I really don't know for sure. I say, okay, well, is there a chance that the baby is a person before the baby is able to live outside the mother's womb? And they say, well, yeah, sure. I guess there's a chance. And I say, well, what if you're wrong and you kill that baby? What if it is a person and you kill that little boy or girl? Then what? Now you've killed a person on the basis of your own, on the basis of a mere assumption, on the basis of something you don't know is true. When you're talking to an atheist or you're talking to somebody who's not a Christian, they're trying to make all these spectacular statements about ethics and morality, and we don't know when life begins and all this other stuff. You're trying to make what's a very simple question into a very complicated question. And so I say, actually, as a Christian, I believe this is a very simple question. I believe that that baby is a person from the moment of conception. I offer the case that I made earlier. But I also think that the science lines up with the scripture. We know that life begins at the moment of conception, that that baby is a reproducing, that baby has all of the biological markers of life. It's reproducing, it's consuming, it's all of the, if you look in a biology textbook, what are the markers for life? We know that all of the biological markers for life are there with that baby. So the scripture says that the baby is alive and a person at the moment of conception. The biology says that the baby is a alive at the moment of conception. And then I ask this question, why don't you believe the science?
Yep.
Why don't you believe? Because one of the things that liberals are constantly.
Yeah, we're supposed to be the anti-science people.
We're the ones that don't believe the science.
Yeah.
I say, well, why don't you believe the science? I mean, find me an embryology textbook that says that that baby is not a human person when it's conceived in the womb. And I love doing this on college campuses because I say there's a college bookstore right over there. Go into that bookstore and find me an embryology textbook that tells me that a baby is not a person at the moment of conception. You can't do it. You won't do it. It's not. Find me a biology textbook that says that. You won't do it. You can't do it. It's, you may be able to find it in like a sociology textbook or one of the social sciences or something like that. But when you're in the realm of hard science, you can't do it. And they know that you can't do it. That's why they want to make the argument about personhood to muddy the waters. But I'm not going to let them muddy the waters.
That's right.
You don't get to just decide. Here's the other thing. At whatever point they pick whatever point. Some people say the baby's not a person until after it's alive. After it's born, I'm sorry. This baby's not a person until after it's born. Or a baby's not a person until after it can live outside the mother's womb. Or a baby's not a person until it has a heartbeat. Pick one of those things. Here's the reality. Every single one of those points is completely and totally arbitrary.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely arbitrary. Yeah. And if you try to probe deeper as you're having the conversation with the person, you say, well, why does it suddenly become a person? Why does this little baby suddenly become a person when its heart starts beating? Why does that suddenly make it a person? Or why, if it's able to live outside of its mother's womb, is it able to all of a sudden become a person? This is completely and totally arbitrary. So yeah. I say, let's take it out of the realm of the arbitrary and put it in the realm of hard facts, right? Yep. We know life begins at the moment of conception. Scripture teaches that personhood begins at the moment that life begins and in the mind of God prior to when life even begins. And then I'll finish it with this. You actually know that life begins at the moment of conception, and you believe that personhood begins. And they'll say, no, I don't. And I'll say, oh, really? You say, yeah. I say, well, have you, you've never told any of your friends congratulations when you found out they were pregnant? You've never gone to a baby shower before? Celebrated the conception of a new child? You know, you've never been happy with one of your friends when you found out that they were having a baby or a family member or whatever? No, see, the reality is, outside of this discussion that you and I are having right now, when you leave the realm of academic thought process and you actually are just living in your everyday normal life, you behave as though you know the baby growing in the mother's womb is a person.
That's right.
And here's the evidence of that.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, one of the things that, let me put this up, Humble Clay says, loving this brother, smart and articulate. Huh, well, Humble Clay, that's why we invited him on. If you do want to follow, you know, Pastor Darren, you know, go check out Operation Save America, see what they're doing, and you know, follow him, see what he's trying to do with the abortion issue. You know, one of the things I do with this, Darren, is this. I just started doing this, is when they're making this argument, I bring up Dred Scott.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Because what's Dred Scott? This is the argument that we had in this country years ago that said a black person wasn't a human being. And there were people, so what I will do is I will say, do you support the Dred Scott decision? And they'll say no, if they are familiar with it. If not, you have to explain it. So you're right, saying that just because the government says that blacks are not human beings doesn't mean they're not human beings. So it doesn't matter what the court and the law says, because the law said blacks were not human beings. Yeah. Okay, let me ask you a question. Do you think it was right for the people who ignored that ruling, ignored that law, and stood up against it because they knew that blacks were human beings? And people go, yes. Right. And I say, that's what I'm doing out here. Because,
right, yeah. And why shouldn't we do that with Roe versus Wade?
Exactly. Yeah. Because what Roe versus Wade is saying is the same thing that Dred Scott is saying, just with a different group of people. Instead of saying all blacks are not human beings, it's saying all people in the wombs are not a human being. And therefore, yeah, they don't have human rights. So what, yeah, you're doing with the Dred Scott is you're getting them to again, you are making an emotional appeal to them in this case, because you're, yeah, getting them to defend something they know it's no, Dred Scott was wrong. It's wrong to say that blacks are not a human being. That's wrong for, you know, with slavery. And it's, you know, you should stand up against that. Good. Now you know why I'm out here at this abortion mill or murder, right, mill, right? Yeah. I'm out here because, just like Dred Scott was wrong, abortion is wrong. The only difference between you and I is I'm consistent and you're not.
Right. And that's one of the things when you follow that through, like you can say, okay, why were the, you know, I mean, pick a group of people. Why was Germany wrong when it comes to the Holocaust? You know, well, because they were oppressing Jews and they were killing innocent people. Okay. Or why were slave owners wrong when it comes to American slavery, and so on and so forth. And one of the things that you can find, and this is good, this is a good thing to do when you're talking to college students, because it's one of the only things they understand. Gone are the days when you can just have a reasonable conversation with a college student. They're very emotional, and it's almost all emotion at this point.
Yeah.
Very little. Oh. It's frustrating. All college students, but I've noticed when I'm on college campuses now, we saw when we were at Purdue that one time, it was just a lot of emotion. And but I say,
it's all wokeness.
Yeah, and it's all wokeness. Yeah.
It's insane.
So, and on the wokeness thing, I say, you know, the Germans, the Nazis, were able to do what they did with the Jews because there was an entire class of people that benefited from doing that to the, mm-hmm, Jews. You know, slave owners were able to do what they did to black people in this country because there was an entire class of people that benefited from treating black people as though they were less, mm-hmm, than human. So you have the Nazis treating Jews as though they're less than human, and they benefited from that. You have the slave owners treating black people as though they were less than human. They benefited from that. And now you're advancing the same argument that they advanced back then, which is Jews are not technically people. Black people are not technically people. And why did they make that case? When you're on a college campus, you can do that.
Because they benefit from it.
Because there was a whole class of people that benefited from it. The white slave owners made that case because there was a whole class of people that benefited from it. And there were whole societies and cultures that accepted what we now know to be completely and totally irrational because they benefited from it. And my friend, now you are the one making that same argument. And the reason that you're making that argument is because you benefit from
it. And if they say they don't, it's like, wait, your whole argument is that it's a woman's choice. She should have the freedom. If it's a case of rape, which is what I was dealing with Purdue, right?
Yeah.
It was like, well, I would have been depressed. I would have been. Well, so you benefit from killing another human being.
Right.
Yeah. You benefit from it.
Beneficiary of that.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of, you know,
because it doesn't change your economic status. It doesn't change, you know, you don't have to deal with the remembering of it.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and that's, guys are the best ones to talk to too with that. I mean, you have that conversation with women, but guys are like, well, how do I benefit from women being able to have abortion? And I was like, look around. Are you trying to tell me that everybody on this college campus is not hooking up with each other and nobody's having babies? You know what I mean? Like, let's really think this through, buddy. You know, like, have you put a lot of thought into this at all? You know, young men who don't want to take responsibility benefit tremendously from abortion, especially on college campuses. Young women benefit from abortion as well. Society as a whole doesn't benefit, but they've been and the man and the young man and the young woman don't actually benefit either, but they've been hoodwinked into thinking that they benefit. Yeah,
conditioned that they do. But this is the way the thinking that we're doing is what I always tell people to do. It's, I always bring it to the slavery issue because there's, when you think about abortion and you think about slavery, both are an ownership issue. Both dehumanize the person, either the blacker or the person in the womb, but they use dehumanization and then they claim ownership. And because they have ownership, they have the right to do whatever they want. So what I'll often do with someone is I will defend slavery. And again, I'm getting an emotional response. I want them, and I will continue to defend slavery until they tell me, I'm listening for these key words. I'm listening for the words, this, it's wrong to say that another human being is your property.
Yeah.
So, and I'll say, so you're saying it's wrong to say this is my property? And they'll say, yes. Once they do that, I say, then explain to me the difference between this is my property and this is my body.
Right.
Because there is a difference. This is my property didn't end in death.
Yeah.
This is my body does. So this is my property is a far better situation. You're promoting something worse than this is my property. Because let me just play a clip of something real quick. This is only like 6 seconds. David Smalley was debating Matt Slick. And in that debate, we had already talked prior. So he knew where I was going with this question.
Yeah,
because we talked about the ownership issue, and his whole argument with Matt was that Christianity is immoral because of slavery. He made his whole argument was on slavery. So when it came to Q&A, this is what happened.
Mr. Smalley, do you believe that abortion is moral?
Oh, boy. I'm glad I'm debating him instead of you.
Why? Because he did not want to debate me. Because he already knew, you know, it was interesting because he actually said, well, you know, are they sentient or not? In other words, are they aware or not? And it's like, it doesn't matter. I said, it doesn't matter. Yeah. You argued slavery is wrong because of an ownership issue and you're arguing for ownership. And when I said, now remember, this isn't in a debate, crowd half Christian, half atheist. And when I said, explain to me the difference between this is my body this is my property and this is my body. He froze and there were like three tables of atheists that just went, ooh. They got the point, right? His whole argument was God, a Christian God's not moral, but he wants to defend something that is, he just said he's saying his atheism is moral without God. That's what he's arguing. And yet he supports something that's not moral. So, before we go on with some more
One other thing on that real quick, if it's okay, because you brought up it's sentient. The bit. Here's what I want to say. Every argument in favor of that idea that the baby is not a person, but a potential person, there is no rational argument to support that point. And so I didn't get into some of the arguments that people bring up to support that point, but they're all bad. So they'll say it's a person. It's not a person. It's a potential person because it's not sentient yet. And I say, well, what do you mean by sentient? They say, you know, like aware of its surroundings. I say, okay, well, is it okay for me to kill you while you're sleeping? You're not aware of your surroundings when you're sleeping. If a person gets into a car accident, but they're alive, but they're not aware of what's going around them because they're in a coma, is it okay to just kill them because they're in a coma? And everybody knows the answer to those questions are no. That's a bad argument. It's okay. It's not. It's a potential person and not a person because it can't live outside of its mother's womb. Well, okay. Or because it can't live on its own. It's dependent upon the mother. And when it comes out of the womb, and my answer back to that, it's usually college students. And I say, apparently you've never been around a baby before, because a baby that's born, like a baby just after it's born, is as dependent on its mother in that moment as it was before it was born.
Well, I usually say, you know, at 18, you're still dependent on your parents. Yeah, even up to 25 nowadays.
25 in our culture. I mean, you know, and those are two examples. There is no logical argument in defense of that idea that it's not a person, it's a potential person. And so what they'll try to do is obfuscate, change the meaning of words, and muddy the waters. And they'll sometimes try to do obfuscate by redefinition, which is where that's when they talk about the fetus thing or whatever else is can. When that argument comes up, you know, you've actually probably won the debate, because all they're trying to do is muddy the waters with that. There is no strong argument. And so don't be intimidated by that.
Yeah.
Stand on the word of God. Stand on the moral authority of the word of God. Don't sacrifice that the baby is a human being from the moment of conception, and hold your ground and have that argument. Show them how every argument they would advance to support that point is completely and totally irrational.
Yeah, when someone talks to me about simians and they'll say, well, you know, it's not simian. I say, how do you know? Do you remember?
Right.
Because the Bible says John the Baptist knew when Jesus entered the room.
Yeah.
He had a knowledge. So he was Simeon in the womb.
Yeah. And that's another one of those great passages we can point to. There's a lot. And the Bible talks about the preborn actually a lot. People don't recognize how much it does. But you got John the Baptist, worshiping in the womb. Like, not only is he sentient, but he's worshiping in the womb.
He's recognizing that Jesus was there.
Yeah.
Right? And so yeah. Well, let's take a quick word from our sponsor, MyPillow. Folks, if you want to get yourself a good night of sleep, they support us here, and we want to help you get support for your sleep. So, but though there's other things they have other than your sleep. I've been using the MyPillow, it's really the MySlippers. They're running a sale on them. I think the lowest they've been right now. So if you go to MyPillow.com and get their slippers, they're at the lowest price that they have. And you can use promo code SFE, that stands for Striving for Eternity, to get your discount. You can get their pillows, their towels, their sheets, their mattress topper. They got stuff if you want to, you know, you cut yourself and you can't stop bleeding. They got stuff for that, actually. They even have hand sanitizer. So they got a lot more than you may think. So they even have beds for your animals, for pets. So they got a whole lot of things. Check out all the stuff at MyPillow, made here in America. And if you get stuff from them by using the promo code SFE, that tells them that you are got there from us, and that keeps them supporting us, so we would appreciate it. So Drew here is saying, Drew from Matter of Theology says, you know who really loves MyPillow? A six-month-old baby. So my friend, you're about to lose your MyPillow, because once you give it to your six-month-old baby, you're never getting it back. So go check out MyPillow.com. Use promo code SFE. Another thing I want to let you guys know about, we're running a sale on this book right here, Sharing the Good News with Mormons. We are giving you 35% off if you get that book, Sharing the Good. There, you got it. There you go. Just use the coupon code LDS. It stands for Latter-day Saints. And use that promo code to get 35% off of Sharing the Good News with Mormons. We are going to sell out our inventory, and I don't know if we're going to carry them anymore. We might, but where this book is really helpful is not just in sharing the good news with Mormons. It is in that, teach you a lot about Mormonism, but it's really good in just witnessing, ideas for witnessing. So encourage you guys to get the book, Sharing the Good News with Mormons. Go to strivingforeternity.org, go in the store and pick it up there. All right. So with that, let's pick up back to picking up some arguments that people make, that abortion is just a healthcare issue. It's just about reproductive rights. Is abortion so the challenge comes to you as that this is just a healthcare issue. There's no murder of a child involved in this.
Yeah, so this is one of those arguments, if I can just be frank, which I know you're okay with that. Mm-hmm. If I can just be frank, this is actually one of the arguments.
If you want me to call you Frank, I will, but
I'm tempted to do the old preacher joke there. You'd call me whatever you want, just don't call me late for dinner. But this argument is actually our fault. This is an argument of our own making on the pro-life side of the argument. And the reason why, and we run into this argument a lot when we're out at the abortion clinic and when we're doing politics and so forth. And the reason why is because a lot of the laws that we've passed, which have been good intention laws, have been healthcare laws. So like the laws that, you know, count the number of paper towels that have to be in this dispenser, or the wideness of the hallways, or you have to look at a ultrasound before you have an abortion, or even like the 20-week bans or whatever. All of these laws are in the healthcare statute at the state level. And so we've actually, the law's a teacher, and we've actually taught people to believe that abortion is a healthcare issue. And we need to undo that as Christians. We need to come back to the Bible as our moral foundation for why That's we're right. saying that abortion is wrong and how we go about dealing with it. And so one of the ways that we address this issue when a person says abortion is a healthcare issue is we say, no, it's not. It's murder.
That's right.
Just call it what it is. It's murder. No, it's a healthcare issue. No, I'm sorry. It's murder. And we haven't dealt with it like murder for a very long time. And in part, that's our fault, because we haven't stood on the word of God and dealt with it as murder. And we as Christians need to do better and call it what it is and treat it like what the word of God says it is. It's murder. So when a person says abortion is a healthcare issue, you know, give me another example of a healthcare issue where the two patients go in and it's intended that only one gets to come out alive.
Yeah.
That's not healthcare. I'm sorry.
All right. So we got two more questions then for you.
Yeah.
This is the one that I saved this one for later, because this is the more difficult one that people have a harder time with.
Yeah.
Okay. What about rape and incest? You're forcing a woman to have to remain pregnant and have to deal with live with the situation of a rape or incest.
Yeah. So, well, first of all, when it comes to this issue, this is one of those, I said, let me be frank just a minute ago. So this is one of those issues that actually calls for a certain amount of gentleness, because oftentimes, especially if you're on a college campus, you get this question a lot from young women, and oftentimes they're bringing it up because they have been raped, mm-hmm. and sometimes they've been raped and had an abortion.
That's what I was dealing with at Purdue with you, with that one young girl.
Yeah. And so this is not the place, from a tactic standpoint, if I could just stop and address tactics here really quick, this is not the place to bring out your cheekiest argument. Okay. Nope. This is the place where you slow down, you exercise patience and grace with the person that you're talking to, because you can win them over with this, and they have won them over many times with this. When they say, what about rape? What about incest? What about life of the mother? So let me deal with each one of those three issues. My argument that abortion is murder is built upon the moral foundation that the human being that's in the mother's womb, or that the baby that's in the mother's womb, is a human being created in the image of God, and therefore that baby's life has infinite value and worth. Now, any one of those three circumstances, and I'll talk about life of the mother a little bit more in a minute, because there's more of a legislative issue there. But any one of those first two circumstances, and often the third circumstance, do not change my moral foundation for why I'm saying abortion is wrong. If a woman is raped, that is a terrible circumstance. It's a terrible thing. And unfortunately, it has happened far too often in our culture. Part of the reason, there's all kinds of problems with the Me Too movement, but part of the reason that we have the Me Too movement is because men have not treated women well in our culture for the last 30 years. And we Christian men need to repent, and we need to step up and do better about protecting the women that are in our lives, our daughters, you know, sending them off to college where they're unprotected and so forth. I get off my soapbox on that. But abortion is a terrible, terrible, or well, abortion is, but rape is a terrible, terrible thing. And rape and abortion are actually wrong for the same reason. They're wrong because you're taking the body of a human being who's created in the image of God, and you're treating that person as though they have no value or worth. And so as terrible and sad a thing as rape is, because that baby is still a human being that's created in the image of God, it is still wrong to murder that baby, even in that circumstance. A. B, and if I get into more of the pragmatic argument, there are all kinds of studies out there that show that when a woman has an abortion after she's been raped, that doesn't actually help her get better. It makes her worse. It pushes her into a deeper, darker hole. One of the lies that the abortion industry tries to sell to young women is, okay, you were raped. It was a terrible circumstance. They pretend to be a friend. Draw them in. Just have this abortion and all will be well with you. Just have this abortion. You won't have to worry about raising this baby. You won't have to worry about dropping out of school or whatever else the case may be. But that just simply isn't the case, because God put a conscience in each one of us. And when a woman takes the life of her own child, even in instances of rape, her conscience torments her because the blood of her innocent child is on her hands. And so in instances of rape, as terrible as circumstances that is, that's still a human being created in the image of God that has infinite value and worth, and that life needs to be protected. I take everything that I just said about rape and apply it to incest as well. Incest is an ugly, terrible thing. It exists less so in our culture than it has in generations past, but it still does exist. The thing about incest and rape is that the biblical penalty for rape and incest is death. And I believe in the death penalty for rapist, and I believe in the death penalty for incest, but I do not believe in the death penalty for the baby in either one of those two instances. And so incest, I would say much of the same thing about rape, about incest, as I said about rape. It's a terrible, horrible situation. And when we're ministering the gospel to women that have gone through that, we need to focus heavily on the doctrine of expiation, because they feel dirty. And we need to teach them that the gospel makes them clean, and that they haven't done anything morally wrong. It's not their fault. There's forgiveness and cleansing in Jesus Christ. Now, what about the life of the mother? This is one that people think is a little bit more complicated, but in a certain sense, it's not actually complicated. Why do we say that we don't believe in exceptions for the life of the mother? Well, because when Planned Parenthood versus Casey was passed down, and also Roe versus Wade, there was another decision that was passed down on top of that, in which the Supreme Court ruled on what constitutes life of the mother. And the Supreme Court essentially determined that life of the mother can be virtually anything. It can be she has a hangnail. It can be she's depressed.
Yeah,
she got kicked out of her house. It could be any number of things that counts as life of the mother. So anytime a state adds a life of the mother exception in a piece of legislation, basically what they're doing is they're leaving the door wide open for abortion to continue on demand in their state. And there are some states where these well-intentioned laws, like Alabama, passed an abortion ban that had a huge exception for life of the mother. And the problem is, basically what you're doing is you're creating a backdoor abortion industry. You're allowing the abortion industry to continue. And what you're going to see is you're just going to see, whereas right now the instances of abortion to protect the life of the mother are very small. It's less than 1% of all abortions. What you're going to see is you're going to see that percentage grow, because now the only way a woman can have an abortion is if she has one of these exceptions for life of the mother.
Let me just ask a question with that. You know, if you have a case where the mother's life is at stake, and I mean, that's what life of the mother should be. She is going to die. You have a baby who is, you know, there's a cases where you have the baby will implant in the, not in the uterus, but within the fallopian tube. Yeah. So if that baby continues to grow there, the mother will die.
Yeah. Those instances do arise. They're very rare, but they do arise. And the question comes, well, what are we as people who want to put a ban on abortion without a life of the mother exception, for example, what do we say should happen in those situations? And when you're talking about an ectopic pregnancy and over 90% of those situations, the baby's already dead when it's been discovered in the fallopian tubes. Yep. And so in that case, that's not actually an abortion.
Yep.
in the cases where the life of the mother may be in danger because she's pregnant. So, like, for example, an instance where a mother has cancer and she needs to take certain medicine, but that medicine will kill the baby, you know, something like that. We've seen those cases. What do we think that doctors ought to do in that situation? Well, we think that doctors ought to treat the mother and the baby as though they have two patients, and they ought to try to do everything that they possibly can to keep that baby inside of that mother for as long as humanly possible, so that that baby has the right, has the possibility, the best possible chance of survival. And at the point when that baby can no longer be inside of that mother, then you deliver the baby and you provide that baby with whatever life-saving care that you can. And by the way, that's not considered an abortion when that happens. That's a delivery. Nobody considers that an abortion. It doesn't even count as an abortion in the abortion statistics. And so, you know, if she's 20 weeks, 21 weeks, 22 weeks, you treat the baby as though the baby's life has infinite value and worth. But the mother's life also has infinite value and worth. And if they're both going to die, right? If you just leave the baby in there, they're both going to die. So what you do is, what we're saying is that you should give the baby the best possible chance. Don't just treat the baby like the baby's life doesn't matter. And you say, well, how do laws deal with that? There's already Supreme Court rulings and there's already laws in place. When a law passes, will we treat abortion like murder? Okay. Abortion will be treated like every other murder, which means that people say those situations, the woman's going to be prosecuted for murder. There's not a prosecutor on the planet that is going to prosecute that woman for murder. Laws that treat abortion like murder don't mean that every woman that has an abortion or every person that's involved in abortion ever should be prosecuted for murder. They treat abortion like murder where there is an investigation that's done, and it's up to the prosecutor and the investigators to determine what should happen next. And so we're not proposing that people that are in those types of situations should be prosecuted with murder or anything like that. When we say we're trying to take the life of the mother exception out, we're not saying we want women whose lives are in danger to die on the table for the sake of just not having an abortion. That's not what we're saying. We're not cruel. We don't hate women. Any of that, all of those things are lies. We're saying that the life of the baby should be treated as though that baby's life has value and worth and should be protected at whatever degree that it can be protected while you also preserve and care for the life of the mother. So,
all right.
And that is a complicated issue because there are situations where, unfortunately, you deliver the baby at a certain point and the baby doesn't make it. But that's not an abortion.
Yeah.
Nobody treats that like an abortion.
And sometimes people will refer to the fact that you do have what we would call an abortion that is not, you know, you lose the child in the womb. And it's not due to anything. And we don't, you know, so that happens. Drew says this: every time I go to say something, either Andrew or Darren say it before I can finish typing. So the reason for that is because there's this delay. By the time you see it, we've already said it.
That's right. They're stealing it from you, brother.
Yeah. All right. So here's the last question, Pastor Darren, that we hear. And I'm saving this for last because this is one that I think has actually the least argument. So I gave the last one was the hardest argument for us to deal with. Mm-hmm. This is the easiest. This is the one that like makes no sense type of argument.
Yeah.
Men shouldn't have the right to say what a woman could do with her body.
So this is where this is the sharp argument, right? There's a couple different ways you can handle this one. The first, my favorite is,
I'm going to see if your favorite is my favorite.
My favorite is to say, did you just assume my gender? That's my favorite.
Yes. Well, that's what I did with the woman at the grocery store. When she made the thing, I said, excuse me. How dare you assume my gender?
Yeah.
And she looked at me incredulously and was like, you know, you're a man.
But you don't.
You know, and which just goes to say she wants to push the liberal agenda, but she knows she doesn't buy into the liberal agenda.
Yeah. Well, because, again, that goes back to you can't actually live consistently with that worldview.
Yeah.
Liberals are constantly guilty. The hard thing for liberals is, and then I'll give a couple of other answers to this question. The really hard thing for liberals is that they have the misfortune of having to live in the world that God created. You know, they can say whatever they want to say, but they still have to live in this world that God created. So they're constantly going around doing and saying inconsistent things because this is the world God created. They can't help it. So, yeah, we live in a day. That's a good.
Yeah, Drew says we live in a day where people think men can have babies. So,
Exactly. That's I thought you people didn't believe that gender was binary.
Yeah.
You know, there are other answers that you can give, though. I would say, you know, Roe versus Wade was handed down by 9 men.
Yeah, that is my number one answer, because when they say that, because that's what I said to that woman. When she said it, you know, after she was incredulous, what made her walk out was I said, "Ma'am, you think that men shouldn't decide?" And she said, "No." I said, 7 men voted for your right to abortion. Well, there were 9 there, but you know, there were 7 that voted for it. So you should be against abortion until women support it.
Yeah, right. And that's it. It's like irrational. The other thing, if I'm trying to have a serious conversation with the person, and I'll say, you know what, as a man, God says that it's my duty to protect the innocent. And therefore, I have not only do I have the ability, but I have the responsibility to speak up on behalf of the preborn. Yeah. And that's why I'm here doing what I'm doing. And if it's a man that I'm talking to, I say, especially if it's a man that's because men will say that to you. They'll say, well, you shouldn't have any say about this. You're not a woman. And usually the men who say that to you are the men who just brought their girlfriend to the abortion clinic to go murder their baby. And that's when I say, I have a duty to protect the innocent, and so do you. And you should go in there You should be a man and go in there and save your baby. And, you know, the idea that, I mean, women speak into things that have to do with men all the time. So that's just, that whole way of thinking is just inconsistent. So,
And you know, one of the things that you end up seeing with it is the reason we made the argument, that middle one, is the fact that they're saying the men shouldn't have the right to decide what a woman can do, but it was men that made that gave them that right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the thing with it, is when they make that argument, they don't realize, they haven't thought it through to realize that your argument's already flawed.
Yeah.
Because women didn't give themselves this right. Men did.
Right.
And so that becomes the thing that you end up seeing with it. And so, you know, I mean, this is, I hope this has been helpful for folks, because these are going to be these are the arguments that we're going to hear.
Yeah.
You're each of these arguments. I mean, Darren, you've been doing abortion ministry for a long time. Have you gone out and not heard at least one or two or all of these?
Yeah, we get these arguments regularly. There's one other one that I'll point out. And then one other thing I want to say about that last argument, too, is it's a Marxist concept that women have different rights than men, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Our belief is that we all have the same rights that come from who we are. That doesn't mean that men and women are, there's no hierarchy in marriage or whatever else the case may be. That's a separate discussion. But we all, as human beings created in the image of God, have the same negative rights as everybody else. Men and women all have, in that regard, we have the same rights. Women do not have rights that men don't have, and men don't have rights that women do have. None of that. That's not a thing. That's a social Marxist way of thinking about rights. And if I really want to get into it with a person, if I want to have a serious conversation with a person about that, they're postulating positive rights. Oftentimes when they say that woman has a positive right to an abortion, and we're saying, no, the baby has the negative right to not be murdered. The baby has the right essentially not to be messed with, or another way of saying that is the baby has the right to live.
Yep.
And so you could get into a serious argument there if you wanted to. But what I've noticed when I get into that discussion, especially on college campuses and so forth, is the young people that say these sort of things just haven't been equipped to even have that discussion. They don't even know that they're postulating positive rights versus negative rights. But it's a good opportunity to educate them. The other thing that's interesting, the other argument I get, which I bring up here, is it's legal. I get that a lot. You'll hear that a lot if you go out to, I'm sure you probably heard it when you're out at the abortion clinic. You say, well, it would be illegal if it were wrong.
The whole thing that is, the very people who say that are the ones out there protesting outside of Kavanaugh's house tonight.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Because the whole reason they're upset with it is because it's going to be made illegal. And that means that it's wrong.
I'm glad you brought that up. so many inconsistencies are being exposed with the Supreme Court decision with regard to the left. You got, like, for example, you got Joe Biden saying he's going to do something. I don't know if you saw this or not. You got Joe Biden saying that he's going to do something with a with an executive order on abortion if the Supreme Court overrules Roe versus Wade. It's like, what if a Republican president, which Republicans are cowards, that's part of the problem, but what if a Republican president said, just by virtue of the signing of my pen, I'm going to overturn Roe versus Wade? Liberals would lose their mind.
Yeah.
But here's Joe Biden.
Well, that's exactly how he's been doing everything, though.
Yeah. Well, then, so the other inconsistency is you got governors like Newsom in California saying, well, even if they overturn Roe versus Wade, we're going to, you know. His thing was he thought maybe the Supreme Court might criminalize abortion nationwide. And he said, if they do, we're going to defy it. And really, that's one of the things that hits me at the gut when talking about inconsistencies, because you got all these progressive governors out there saying we're ready to disobey the Supreme Court if they say abortion is going to be criminalized, which isn't what the decision says.
Yeah. But that's going back to narrative matters. And this was a question I did want to ask you before we wrapped up, was if Roe versus Wade is overturned.
Yeah.
Does that mean abortion's illegal?
No, and especially if you go read Kavanaugh's decision, there are three things that the Supreme Court could have done, or four things the Supreme Court could have done with abortion. They could have criminalized it. They could have passed down a decision that said, we messed up, abortion's illegal nationwide. That's not what this opinion said. The second thing they could have done is they could have left it in place. This opinion doesn't say that. The third thing they could have done, and I'm still concerned that they might do, is cut out a sliver for more incremental legislation without actually overturning it. The fourth thing they can do is they can overturn it and send it back to the states. That's what the opinion that was written does. It overturns Roe versus Wade and sends the decision back to the states. So what's going to happen if the Supreme Court overturns Roe versus Wade, which I think they should? It was a lawless decree, and they never should have passed to begin with. So they should overturn Roe versus Wade. But even if they do, we're still going to have to do the same work we've been doing for the last 7 or 8 years at the state level, trying to pass legislation that bans abortion at the state level. It will move a big hurdle out of the way, or as I like to say, it'll move a big excuse out of the way, because there is no reason why states shouldn't have banned abortion before Roe versus Wade was overturned. Just like you said, was Wisconsin right to defy the Fugitive Slave Act and nullify slavery in their state? And the answer to that question is yes. If you answer that question no, then you got a whole lot of problems from a historical standpoint. If you say yes, then states always should have had laws that made abortion illegal. But praise God, the Supreme Court looks to be poised to correct its decision. So it's going to take away a big excuse. It's going to remove a big hurdle. But we're still going to have to do a lot of work at the state level now to pass laws at the state level that criminalize abortion in states like Indiana and Georgia and Texas. And
what we really would have liked is that they would just criminalize abortion. And that would have been the right thing to do. They should make the argument that, as you've made here throughout, right, that this is, it's a human body, a human being, and it has human rights.
Yeah, the right thing to do would be, I believe, the right, and there's disagreements from a strategic standpoint and also from a political standpoint. I do believe that the Supreme Court should not just reverse its decision, but should declare abortion to be a criminal act.
Yep.
And they, people say, well, you need a law to do that. There's already laws. There's federal laws that ban murder. So we don't need a new law, actually.
Yeah. All they need to do is identify that scientifically, and I know we got one justice that, you know, can't define a woman because she's not a biologist. So she should just step out of, she's disqualified from this, you know, even if she was in the decision, she's not. But if she was, she should disqualify herself because she's not a biologist. She can't figure out what a woman is. But based on the science, they should, what they should do is identify that a human in the womb is a human and has human rights, and therefore, that's it. I mean, if they have human rights, you can't murder them.
Yeah, so my friend Bradley Pierce, who is the president of Abolish Abortion Texas and also president of the Foundation to Abolish Abortion, wrote a brief to the – he wrote a friend of the court, an amicus brief, to the Supreme Court back when the case was being argued to that effect, essentially to that effect. He basically said, and he also said, the Supreme Court had no business telling the states that they couldn't ban abortion to begin with. They were outside of their constitutional jurisdiction. I'm thankful to see them reverse course on that, but they should, it would be within their constitutional right to ban abortion. But I'm thankful at least that they're going to give the states the opportunity to do it. Lord willing, if they haven't changed their mind, conservatives are cowards. I mean, I never cease to be amazed at the cowardice of conservatives. So I am not taking for granted that that decision that we originally read is actually going to be the one that gets passed down. We need to pray for Kavanaugh. We need to pray for Alito, all those guys that were, because the Chief Justice, who's a snake, John Roberts, is trying to convince all of them to change direction. So he doesn't want to ban abortion. He wants to do the worst thing that could happen is if they passed a decision that said they left the burden clause in place and said, but you can ban abortion at 15 weeks or whatever it is. The reason that would be the worst thing that could happen is because the pro-life movement will celebrate it as a huge win, even though less than 7% of all the abortions done in the United States happen after 15 weeks. They'll still celebrate it as a huge win, and the pro-abort movement will celebrate it as a huge win, and both sides will raise a bunch of money, but guess what? Babies are going to continue to be murdered.
That's right.
So that's the worst-case scenario. The best-case scenario that I see actually happening is if that the original opinion that was written actually comes down. So
yeah, and I think it would if they don't do that, they're setting themselves a bad precedent where, you know, like for the conservatives, I hope they realize if they don't stick with what they did, then every time there is a something before the court, they're not getting any sleep.
Right.
Because this is, you know, they're not, it's illegal to protest outside of the house of a, you know, one of the Supreme Court justices. It's illegal both at a federal level and the local level. So the fact that they're allowing it, these guys should realize, like, if we don't, like, they, what they should do, what I'd love to see them do is say, you know, come out and say, we've changed our minds. We realize that this is a human being and has human rights, and it is murder. Right. And we're doing this because of all the protests. We thank the protesters for helping us to take the bold steps. You know what would happen? Then they won't be so bold to do it the next time.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
well, that is if they do change their mind at this point, they're setting themselves up to be. But what will happen? Here's the thing. OK, so who are the police that are supposed to enforce those laws with regards to the Supreme Court? This is in Washington, D.C. The mayor's a liberal. They're protesting a conservative Supreme Court opinion right now. Say they reverse course and they don't overturn Roe versus Wade. And then a bunch of conservatives show up to protest. And you know what that'll be? Oh, we have another, what do they call it? We have another insurgency on our hands, you know, doing the same thing that liberals are doing right now. And so if you're smart, if you're a Supreme Court justice and you're smart, you're going to hold the line. Otherwise, you're going to every time a controversial decision comes up,
you're not getting any sleep.
Yeah, right. Exactly. People are going to protest. And
every time. Yep.
Yeah, right. So hopefully love to see. I've been praying for those guys by name on a regular basis, praying that they hold the line. But the reality is, and I'll praise God if the Supreme Court overturns Roe versus Wade, I'll also have to eat a lot of crow because, to be honest, frankly, between you and me, I've been saying the Supreme Court isn't going to do it for 5 years now. But I'm happy to be wrong. If the Supreme Court does overturn it, I'll happily admit that I'm wrong. But we're still going to have a lot of work on our hands,
even if the Supreme Court abolitionist movement doesn't end with overturning Roe versus Wade. And that's the thing. And here's the reality. My prediction, they overturn Roe versus Wade, we are going to see a whole lot of Christians that are going to be against the movement of making abortion unthinkable. Yeah. Right. It's going to be like, hey, they overturned Roe versus Wade. Isn't that enough? I mean, we're going to be hearing it now from our own side. That's my prediction. You know,
well, I was going to say this earlier, too, if I can. I mean, when you're out there on the streets, you know as well as I do, the first people that come up and attack you are the professed Christians. It's not really the atheists. They're the first ones that come up.
Yeah.
Those same Christians are going to, I mean, we're already seeing it from the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, right? I mean, if you've been reading their articles they've been putting out for the last couple of months since this whole thing happened, you know, they're already, let's not be divisive over this issue.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. People are killing people. You know what I mean? Like,
that's, and we shouldn't divide over it. No.
Yeah, right.
Let's be nice.
So there is, we're going to see if Roe versus Wade gets overturned, we're going to separate the boys from the men. I believe that to be true. I also will say if Roe versus Wade is not overturned in this case, all these years, the leaders of the pro-life movement have been telling us, we just need to get the right amount of Supreme Court justices and we can overturn it. And that's the strategy. Well, now you have it. You have the Supreme Court justices. You got all the Supreme Court justices you want. Mind you, Republicans have dominated the Supreme Court for the last 60 years now. We've already had two different times Republican-dominated courts that have handed down pro-abortion decisions. But at what point do we say, I mean, if they hand down a decision here that doesn't overturn Roe, at what point do you say, okay, we need to abandon that strategy. We have to do something different. And the thing we have to do that's different is criminalize it at the state level and defy the court. That's what we have to do. And I think even if the Supreme Court rules wrong and they don't overturn Roe, I do think we're going to have a huge opportunity to pull people into the abolitionist movement who are going to be disenchanted with that strategy that hasn't worked for the last 40 years. And I've been saying, and I continue to say, when that happens, we don't stand over those people and say, I told you so. And I don't think there are a lot of abolitionists that actually want to do that. I think what we want to do is we want to embrace those people in with open arms and say, welcome to the movement. Let's work together to ban abortion at the state level.
I think there might be some that want to stand over and say, see, I told you so.
I hope not. I don't know.
There'll be some. but
I think the movement as a whole, there's going to be a lot of people that are like, yes, come on, come join us.
I think
come
as a whole. Right. So let me just put a final comment here from Humble Clay. He says, you know, that this was helpful, indeed, enjoyable immensely. So Humble Clay and others, if you found this helpful, if this was encouraging to you, if you realize that this battle is coming, I mean, once this case gets heard, you know, or once we hear the decision, this is going to be something you need to get in the hands of other Christians to be ready to give a defense. So please share this. You can share either the video on the YouTube or on Odyssey, or you can go and share the podcast version. If you don't follow our podcast, Apologetics Live, please do so you don't miss an episode. I know there's some previous episodes that I'm going to get on the backlog, because they just didn't make it into the podcast version, but we're gonna have that. Don't worry. So, Darren, I appreciate you coming on. Maybe the audience can just give a thank you.
Thank you so much.
So,
I love you guys. Appreciate striving for eternity, and I don't know who all those people that were making those nice comments where I really appreciate that. It means a lot to me. My brain isn't really working right now. So
yeah, I was going to say at the beginning, you know, that you actually call me friend, but you know, you have had brain damage twice.
That's
so
right, yeah. Two times in the last 3 months. Yeah.
So I mean, we have to question your judgment there, Heaven.
Well, my wife keeps telling me that I'm going to go back to normal. And I keep saying, she's telling me that I'm normal. So my wife admitted that I'm normal.
No, but she's admitting that you once were normal.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So the joke is that my brain never really worked right to begin with. So that's maybe why we're friends. I don't know.
that would explain it well.
Yeah.
I think
I appreciate coming on. Thank you for
having me. Yeah, and I think that you really offered folks some very helpful argumentation to be able to how to defend against these different claims that people are going to make. And so, folks, I hope that maybe this is one of those episodes you got to go back and re-listen. You got to take some notes. But I'm telling you now, you're going to need everything that was discussed today. Because once this ruling comes out, if you thought you were having to deal with it in social media and elsewhere before, once they overturn Roe versus Wade, they're gonna ride this through to the election and make this the major issue. Yeah. And everyone's going to want to shove it in your face. So you have to be ready with a good defense. All right. So consider doing that. I want to give a plea out as a last thing is, would you consider supporting us at Striving for Eternity? COVID has been difficult for us. when COVID hit, we lost about 60-70% of our donations. We've recouped some of that, but we're in need of help. If you could give monthly, I know a lot of people will give us a one-time donation and we appreciate it, but we have monthly expenses. And so, you know, one of the things that's happening right now, part of Striving Fraternity is to go into small churches that can't afford us. That's what we do. So right now, thanks to Joe Biden, it is super expensive to travel. I mean, the flights have tripled. And what that means is without your support, we cannot help these churches. Our goal is to help and strengthen small churches so that they would grow. The reality is the Christianity in America is based on the small church. The average size of a church is 25. And you go, well, MacArthur's church has thousands of people. You know, that's right, which means there's the majority of churches are under 25 people. And they have a pastor who is trying to preach, but he's busy working a side job, being bivocational. And that has to be his priority over the church. And he doesn't have the resources, doesn't have what he needs to be able to provide that church with the support that he needs to. And so that's where we try to come in, come alongside a church and help them out. But we just don't have the resources. We've had to do something we haven't done in the past, which is to say no, because there's just not money in the bank. And we don't want to do that. And so if you could support us, please do that. I mean, you could support us even, you know, like here's a comment from Jason Cave, but not so much about the issue he's adding in the comment, but Jason is a supporter. You see that little icon next to him? That means he's a member through, he supports the YouTube channel and he's a member through YouTube. So that's a way you can support us. But the best way is go to strivingfraternity.org/support and help us on a monthly basis. That would really, really help us. Another thing you can do is let us know. If you want us to come out to your church, contact us, info@strivingfraternity.org. If you have questions about the show, anything, if we could be a help to you, contact us at info@strivingforeternity.org. Pastor Darren, I really appreciate you coming on. You came on short notice, and so I appreciate that. Thank your family for letting us have 2 hours of your time.
Amen. I was blessed to come on. Thank you, brother.
I should say your softball team, because, you know, that's basically what you're working on. You got your wife and the softball team there.
That's right.
The number of kids you have.
How many you need for softball? We're pretty close.
How many do you have right now?
We have nine right now.
Nine, so yeah. I think that's what you need for a softball team.
Yep, there you go.
Yeah.
Now if I could just all get them to do the same thing. I don't know.
Well, the age, Brad, I mean, that you're not going to get the infant on the softball field yet, but...
Yeah, that's true.
Hey, folks, just remember to strive to make today an eternal day for the glory of God, and we'll see you next week. Have a good week.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.